The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
I got my bags packed, I'm on a roll. I'm heading out there, and I'm ready to go.
Amateur Traveler, episode 133. Today, the Amateur Traveler goes to Croatia. Learn about castles and churches, beaches and fried cheese today on the Amateur Traveler.
One more cathedral, got to sit in one more cafe. I know that I should be heading home, but maybe not today.
Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. I have a couple news stories for you before we get into today's interview. It feels a little bit like all the news I've been sharing recently is about airlines and all of it is bad news, and I'm afraid there's a little more of that this week. You've probably already caught the two news stories that I have for you. One is that Frontier Airways has declared Chapter 11, which is bankruptcy. And for those of you who are outside the U.S. and not familiar with the distinction, Chapter 11 says that a company needs protection from its creditors but wants to keep going on functioning. So their flights are still running, and they're hoping to be able to reorganize and get some relief from their creditors and then go back into business in a regular way. And then the second news story, Discount Airline Skybus has ceased operations in the last couple weeks. It's been an awful week for American Airlines and their passengers. They have canceled over 1,000 flights this week because of FAA inspections that were remiss, and over 100,000 passengers have been stranded. The bad news here is that the FAA is going around to a number of airlines because of some irregularities that were discovered recently, and it's expected that this will continue into June. So there is a real chance that if you're taking a vacation here in April, May, or June, that this could affect your travel plans, not just on American, but they will be going to other airlines and doing similar sorts of inspections. There are a number of other news items that are worthy of note, such as the French yacht that was seized by Somali pirates, or the story of how Bellevue Hospital, which is an insane asylum, is being turned potentially into a luxury hotel that I'm not going to get into because of time. This is, I think, going to be a longer episode, but you can check them out at tripinator.com, and the links to the stories I mentioned will be on amateurtraveler.com. I'd like to welcome to the show Amanda Castleman. Amanda is a freelance journalist and a travel writing instructor, and has come to talk to us about Croatia. Amanda, welcome to the show.
Hey, Chris. How you doing?
First things first, Croatia is starting to get to be a popular destination place, but really only in the last few years. What led you to Croatia?
I had a rather convoluted personal story that led me to Croatia. First, there certainly was an intrigue with the Balkans as an area that was opening up as the EU expanded. On a personal level, I was dating a man who went off backpacking around the world, and I was due to meet him in Italy, and we were going to travel through the Balkans, which was going to be his first step outside what I called the mayonnaise belt of Australia, New Zealand, Germany, English-speaking, and Germanic countries. So we were going to venture outside the mayonnaise belt and go on this great road trip. And then he ran off with a German backpacker with a diamond in her tooth 2 weeks before I was due to join him. So I called a good friend of mine, the travel writer Edward Redeker Henderson, and he actually flew over from Alaska to help me with this series of journalistic assignments I had throughout the Balkans. And we wound up in Croatia, as well as Bosnia and Slovenia.
Then we'll jump right into the meat of it. What were the highlights of the trip for you?
Some of the highlights were just those incredibly silly, like, mini-golf moments. I think place-wise, what surprised me most was a small town called Trogir. It's out on the coast. It's a medieval fortified island near Split. It's 1 square mile, but it's just bristling like a hedgehog with these towers made out of creamy stone. And it was kind of almost like a trick box type of location where it was so small you could drive off it by accident. One wrong turn and you're on the next island over a causeway. But once you got inside all these crazy little alleys and this just sort of warm, pale stone everywhere. You could wander for days. It is a UNESCO World Heritage Center, but nothing either of us had heard of until we basically stumbled upon it.
Interesting. And your itinerary, let's go into a little detail and just cover up front that you didn't go to Dubrovnik, which is probably the most popular place in Croatia, because...
Partly because it is the most popular place in Croatia, frankly. I mean, as a travel writer, you're constantly seeking out the next destination,
right,
not where the cruise ships necessarily are already docking. The other factor was I had a few guidebook research assignments who'd asked me to go into the interior specifically because those are areas that are still opening up. And it seemed like a wonderful deal at the time. I had a British company that said, oh, we're going to give you £50, $100 a day in expenses, plus pay all this money to go research distinctive hotels. And I thought, okay, great. I can do this other writing on the backside of that. And got over there, and they were supposed to have scouted distinctive hotels, and we were finding like two rooms above a gas station. And
well, that would be distinctive.
it had a lot of local color if you were into petrol pumps. And so this gig sort of fell through in the middle of the trip. It was a little heartbreaking in a way because we'd come all this distance and then gone out into the Croatian countryside where like clearly no tourist had ever been except the person who rented the room over the gas station. It put us into some strange territory, but that actually wound up being the strength of the trip. One night we wound up staying in, it was called the Hotel Puntar near Mount Medvednica, which is 20-something kilometers outside of Zagreb, the capital.
Mm-hmm.
We drove up this mountain in the mist. It was a real kind of movie land haunting scene. And there were these sort of strange Croatian foragers kept appearing out of the clouds. And we drove back down because I'd read that there was this Hotel Puntar that had a big Soviet fighter plane outside of it. It was a real former Yugoslavia stronghold.
Okay.
So we drove and drove and drove through this very surreal, almost like a Japanese watercolor landscape. And I had to eat my traditional vegetarian meal in Croatia of fried cheese and French fries, which is almost all I ate for 2 weeks. And then this wedding kicks in, and we're just in the middle of nowhere, you know, outside of the capital. They played the Battle Hymn of the Republic on the accordion until 3 a.m. at this hotel. And it would just be this flurry of accordion notes. Then you'd hear someone shout, glory, glory, and it didn't stop all night. So we wound up having a lot of these strange textual moments. Or we were the only guest in a castle called Dvorak Bizanek. It was in Prigada. I was very excited. My last name being Castleman, I was going to get to stay in a castle. And we sort of showed up. It was just kind of a crummy castle. It didn't have any battlements, and it didn't really have any turrets. And it had a really angry alpaca that kept spitting at me. And we had nettle soup. And it's a great memory. I mean, we were the only people there running around, and there was all this crazy artwork on the walls. But again, it has this very primitive tourism once you're outside of areas like Dubrovnik or Zagreb. It has that almost kind of raw, very undiscovered feel. And in a lot of these areas, these rural areas, when you get inland, the backpackers aren't even there because the bus and train infrastructure isn't in place.
Oh, okay.
When you get a car and you start heading inland, oh, and to answer your earlier question about my itinerary, we started in Zagreb and we drove down towards the Plitvica Lakes, which are a series of 16 cascading lakes. They're an incredible kind of peacock turquoise color. And you walk on boardwalks out among these interconnected lakes and waterfalls, and it's a pretty amazing, definitely a world-class destination as far as natural beauty goes.
Hmm.
We sort of headed there and then went down the coast towards Trogir and Split, went out to Hvar, which is supposed to be a gem, and we headed right back for the mainland with the weird llamas and the accordion music, frankly.
Supposed to be. It doesn't sound like you found it to be a gem.
I think Hvar was tricky for me. I lived in Europe for almost 8 years, a lot of that in Italy. And Hvar, it's on the Adriatic coast and has had a lot of Italian influence. So for me, it felt very familiar, sort of more of the same, but not quite as good, which I'm probably going to get now hate mail from Croatians. It is an amazing city, I think, particularly if you haven't been to the Italian Adriatic. It is a World Heritage site, but we kept joking it was a World Heritage identikit. Like, they were just kind of checking things off. All right, do we have a Venetian castle? Check. Do we have atmospheric harbor with boats bobbing at buoys? Check. It may have been because we were there off season, but for me, it just didn't pull together into a real sense of place. I felt like I was in a heavily touristed destination with some glossy bed and breakfasts. I know they have a thriving lavender trade, but I just couldn't get a real sense of why that was different from other Adriatic destinations. I think it's a beautiful place, but it wasn't what we were looking for in Croatia. We wanted to drive around and go to truck stops where they were roasting sausages on open fires and drink wormwood wine. That, to me, was the adventure there, not staying in a bed and breakfast over a quaint harbor.
Okay, so it wasn't that you found it to be an ugly place, but it's a pretty place in a region full of pretty places that didn't stand out as much for you.
Yes, and I also the character was a lot more Italianate, which I adore, but that's not necessarily why I would go to Croatia. It is interesting that I think both Hvar and Trogir, those are two destinations that are now appearing on US and UK on the travel maps. Mm-hmm. I wound up writing about Croatia for Frommer's put out a book called Dream Vacations. And we had a big go around about, well, you got to talk up Hvar. And I said, all right, well, it's only 75 words. I can get 75 words of good out of that. But I think as a travel writer, you just hit some places that don't speak to you, or more importantly, in this case, just didn't speak to my expectation of the place. So I would absolutely recommend it for anyone that hasn't experienced that kind of seaside, eat your ice cream, stroll on the promenade, stare up at the ancient fortifications, Adriatic seaside town. It's great
Sounds
for that.
Sounds awful, yeah.
But it is not the wild and woolly.
Okay.
It's
no alpacas. It's
not, no alpacas, exactly.
Okay.
It all comes down to alpacas in the end.
When you talked about meals, you mentioned something about you're a vegetarian, and it sounds like Croatia is not quite yet vegetarian ready.
It's a little bit of hard work. Before I went, I found a few Croatians and asked them to write out, I'm vegetarian. And universally, I mean, they all just started laughing and said, like, we don't really even have a word for this. Here, you can try the Russian. The worst meal, I mean, typically it would be fried cheese and French fries, as I mentioned earlier, but by far the scariest, it was actually at the truck stop where they were roasting sausages on the fire, and I saw a salad on the menu, and I thought, oh, great, please, some leafy greens, bring it on. And it was a salad composed of, let me see if I remember this right, pickles, one-third pickles in a big wedge, and one-third pickled beets, and then pickled cabbage.
Okay.
And it was sort of arranged like one of those radiation signs, don't go there, you know, big third wedges. It was just really, it was about the most terrifying platter of pickled Balkan food. But that's what I signed up for. I mean, I left all the pizza on the coast and I went inland. Uh-huh. And I will say both Hvar and Trogir had some exquisite pizza. They do some very, very exceptional cooking. My friend I was traveling with, who was a meat eater, was delighted all the way along. But vegetarian, I would recommend bringing a few granola bars. Yeah.
Okay. For your friend, for instance, you're saying the food wasn't as difficult. It's just not vegetarian friendly so much right now.
Right.
Okay.
I think it's just not part of their culture.
Sure.
We did have some good moments, like stopping and buying honey from women selling it along the road. That's a really incredible taste of the landscape. We'd get bread from a local bakery and just dip it in this honey. And I will say in Zagreb, I ate exceptionally well. It's a very cosmopolitan capital. We wound up staying at the Arc Hotel Allegro, which is, I've been marketing it as Croatia's first design hotel, which was pretty fun. And since it was the end of the trip, we treated ourselves to dinner at kind of the Grand Dame Hotel, which is the Regent Esplanade. And that was kind of where all the nobility and war correspondents and everyone stayed over the last 400 years or so. I don't know how old the hotel is offhand. It looks like a castle. It looks like the castle I wanted out in the countryside. Hmm. We ate one of the more exceptional meals of my travel and career there, I would say. So there is some amazing food to be had. I think because of my dietary preferences, I missed a little bit of it. That's all.
Okay. And then you had also mentioned this being one of the former parts of Yugoslavia, which of course was a little bit of an artificial country with all these Balkan countries kind of pasted together after World War I. And I think most people are aware of the trouble that this region has gone through. How much did you still see traces of that in Croatia?
Well, at Plitvica Lakes that I mentioned earlier, the chain of 16 lakes, there weren't overt signs, but later I'd read that was one of the more brutal areas of fighting. because it's out close by the Bosnian border.
Mm-hmm.
That sort of gave me pause. But when we actually drove across the Bosnian border, we crossed at what's known as the Biatch Corridor. And it was one of the, I know, yeah, it's unfortunate. There was a lot of bad jokes.
Especially
because what they call a waterfall is a slap. And so that day became the Biatch Slapped Day of waterfalls in Bosnia. Unfortunately, that's just us being childish. So we went across it at Biatch. And that was the most war-torn landscape I've encountered anywhere. Hmm. On, gosh, for five continents, just bombed in roofs. There was still big, huge craters out in fields, just houses that were nothing but blown apart, terracotta tiles, and maybe one retaining wall left.
Hmm.
It was a very frightening landscape. My friend Edward got kind of goofy at the border. We pull up. They've probably seen like three American tourists in the last year crossing in the Biatch Corridor or something, because we're just out in the boonies with this car driving around like travel writer clowns do. They asked what we were going for, and Ed just goes, "Oh, lunch." And I'm thinking, no, he's got a machine gun. Don't be funny. I mean, it was true, but I'm speaking very slowly, saying, no, we go to see your beautiful country, then we turn around and come home today. And once you were across the border, everything changes. There suddenly are mosques. There were a lot of people carrying livestock and wood and produce on their backs. It wasn't that it was an undeveloped country, but there was suddenly a much more raw edge. You were much more aware that this was a place recovering from fighting, and fairly recently. It still would be reasonable to go around with a horse and a cart because your car got bombed out 10 years ago. That, to me, was one of the more powerful elements. It was one of the first times I've actually been in a landscape that still bore those scars so freshly, and not in any type of national monument,
mm-hmm.
clean, tidy type of way, but in a someone blew up grandma's house and we just left it in the field. Also, seeing the tank barricades, I'd not encountered that anywhere else. And those seemed like they went on for miles.
Hmm.
We actually have a friend that's a war correspondent who flinched when we told him we went to the Biatch Corridor, and he was having flashbacks to a much more vivid and intense time. It was a very curious and very sobering, powerful place to wind up.
Mm-hmm. You ventured into Bosnia-Herzegovina, but you didn't see a whole lot of that on this trip?
No, okay. No. It's a place I'd really like to go back to. I think there's a wealth of destinations in the Balkans, like Albania. There are still some security issues in mm-hmm. that part of the world. I would read up a lot, and I would definitely read the State Department warnings. Someplace like Albania, frankly, I would love to go. That might be the type of area I would even consider hiring a local driver, okay. interpreter, especially as a woman, for comfort factor. Croatia was great. Two Yanks driving around in a car, unable to read the signs half the time, although a lot of them do have Roman transliterations.
Language brings up a question of, so it is not a Romance language, and yeah. so it's a language that most people, when they go there, don't speak. Mm-hmm. What kind of issues did you run into with language?
We did a lot of sign language.
Tourist charades.
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
A little bit of English along the Adriatic coast, Italian, and inland German, which
oh,
was
really?
A real
okay.
workout for my high school German, but a lot of the older educated people still spoke German. So that got a bit of a workout for those old skills that hadn't been trotted out since senior year.
Did we finish covering your itinerary, or did I just interrupt you in the middle of it?
It was fairly patchwork and kind of wandering, because once we got out this prescribed route for the guidebook research, we'd sort of look in the guidebook and think, well, you know, what do we feel like doing today? Well, heck, let's go stay at this castle. So there wasn't any real purposeful movement that I would encourage anyone. Highlights, definitely Zagreb, beautiful city. Trogir out on the coast. You know, you can drive down through the Plitvica Lakes to Trogir. That would be a fantastic week-long itinerary. We read at one point that there's apparently something called the Krapina Man, who is a well-preserved Neanderthal. I believe he's a mummy. Kind of one of those, like, who was the guy they pulled down off the ice? Was
in it? Switzerland, uh-huh.
Yeah, Achtier. I can't quite remember what his
right,
name
right.
was. But I think he was some figure like that. We just drove out to Krapina, and we never even saw Krapina Man, but because we got horribly, horribly lost. And I think we illegally crossed the border like 8 times. It was like an open border between there and Slovenia. And we were so lost. Every time we'd circle around, we were sort of violating some treaty, I'm sure. That's one of the reasons I have very warm memories of Croatia and the Balkans in general. As a travel writer, often you go in with a purpose. For someone like Tim Cahill, he'll often kind of set himself a slightly strange purpose, like, well, I'm going to take a chicken bus out to this country and then see the world free fishing, spear diving competition or whatever. And then that will set him on the path of having these quirky adventures. And so quite often we travel that way, or we travel because an editor's asked us, I want you to go check out Ljubljana. It's really happening right now. For us just to get to wander at whim.
What was the biggest surprise you had?
Aside from the accordion music, accordion battle hymn of the Republic.
Yeah. That's pretty good, actually.
I would have to say, on an emotional level, Biatch on the Bosnian border. Mm-hmm. For Americans, we often don't get that sense of a domestic landscape just by political violence. And I'm really grateful that we don't don't have an acute sense of that. Seeing the day-to-day life of these people that have been bombed back to using horse carts, that was probably the biggest feel-it-in-your-gut revelation moment that I had. Not necessarily the cheeriest surprise. I also discovered I like fried cheese. Is that happier?
I'm sorry you hadn't discovered that earlier. I happen to also like fried cheese. Most memorable person you met?
Oh, wow. Most memorable person. It's funny, I think because of the language barrier, our interactions were so limited because of language barriers. The woman I stopped and bought honey from, a marvelous character, but a two-minute encounter. I think that was one of the strange things, is because the tourism infrastructure was so limited, we would arrive in a small place and we would typically rent a room. I'd usually go for the grandma's. I would negotiate a room in German, and then we would be taken into someone's house and given like two moldy blankets for $25 a night for two people. It's kind of hard to argue, but it didn't really allow for a lot of interpersonal connection.
And would you just drive around and see someone would be advertising Zimmerfrei or something?
Yeah. Okay. The Zimmer camera. They have it out there in a couple languages. Suddenly you'd just be staying in someone's home and kind of sitting there with your bread and your honey. I mean, it was a very isolating way to travel in some respects, because there weren't a lot of people you could fluidly communicate with in a way that you would bond and really share emotion. I have to say, people were delighted that we were there. Universally, it didn't feel any friction whatsoever as Americans. Typically, we were just a curiosity. Once you get that far in Croatia, it just becomes a matter of like, what are you doing here? And why? You know, I mean, you're a source of wonder. Imagine in small town America, if someone from Georgia, former Soviet Union, showed up, just be thinking, well, how did you wind up in Burlington, Washington?
Right,
we were a curiosity, and not in a bad way. I will say the most poignant interpersonal moment that we did manage across a rather extreme language barrier, this was in Slovenia, if you'll just let me slip over the border briefly. And we'd gone to a very small town where we'd read there was a honey museum, and my friend used to be a beekeeper. And so we traveled out there on sort of milk delivery train type of situation, and wound up in this small town where it was beautifully sunny and spring, and we stumbled into the middle of a traditional wedding was going on. And we didn't quite crash it, but we sat in the cafe and watched the bride, who is one of the most stunningly beautiful women either of us had ever seen. And she was all in the traditional garb, and her groom was just beaming, like, I can't believe I'm this lucky. And we sort of just sat and watched them. There was a little bit of traditional dancing and lots of cheering and toasting. And we sort of got to be on the periphery. And it's sort of those small moments of when you can't fully speak the language, but there still are universal stories that you can engage with.
Sure.
Those are kind of more of what stands out from that trip, because we were just very isolated by the language and also by the car. As good as the car was and as essential to travel in those rural areas, you don't get your hitchhiking bus, train type of misadventures.
Sure. It is more isolating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What do you wish you'd known before you'd gone?
I don't feel like this was particularly a very well thought out trip in my pantheon.
Spontaneous is the word we use for that.
Yeah. No, it was kind of a goober driving around, not speaking the language type of crashing in random houses, hoping you wake up alive type of trip. And the blankets really were moldy and nasty a lot of times. They were kind of musty, you know, like, yeah. I'm not really sure it would have changed much, to be honest. There were certainly places, particularly islands, out on the coast, one of which I think is supposed to be the Jason and the Argonaut Island.
Okay.
If I'm remembering correctly, that's the one called Crick, which is K-R-K, which we just didn't have time to get out there, even with, I believe we were on the ground like 10, 12 days. I would have liked to have spent a little more time hiking around the lakes. Mm-hmm. And boating a little bit. We did do about a 6-mile hike and then took a boat down through the lake system. But I was not prepared for the extreme natural beauty and ruggedness of those areas. And if I went back, I think I would try and explore that a little more intensively to kind of actually get out and interact with that landscape. I'm sure the language problems would be just as bad if you go to inland Croatia now, 2 years later after my trip. I would be very surprised if anything changed substantially there. But you don't need to speak the language real well to hike or bike or go taste honey from the lady on the side of the road. So I think as sort of an interim, before things get slick and polished and they have design hotels out by the Plitvica Jezera lakes, there is a real opportunity for independent adventure travelers to explore that inland area. There's also quite a tradition of religious pilgrimage there. Because of my friend's interest in that, we wound up going to a series of small churches, which I found really fascinating. A lot of them had sort of naive art frescoes, and one of them was quite a large religious center.
And these would be altarpieces?
The one that he was so keen on that we detoured quite a large way was Maria Bistrica. Again, I'm not pronouncing things wonderfully, but it's in the area outside Zagreb called Zagorje. Zagorje. And I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right.
Okay.
But we actually backtracked all the way up into this area again because we'd heard there was a big pilgrimage church with a black Madonna. And that's quite an unusual thing. So again, we went on sort of one of these harem scarab. We're driving 3 days so we can buy our friend Patty a rosary from the black Madonna church. Those often are some of the best memories because...
Sure.
They will bring you into that weird place with the communist era fighter jet and the accordions and the fried cheese. It's sort of what leads you into the unexpected adventure.
Do you have one moment, maybe that you haven't mentioned so far, that is a quintessential Croatia moment for you?
For me, it was the church in Trogir. The church there is in the process of being restored, but it was a horrible, stormy, rainy day. And I, of course, had had this joke with my friend Edward the whole time. I think I'd mentioned earlier that I'd had a bit of a breakup and my buddy, kind of my pseudo-sibling, had bailed me out by I needed a driver because I had all these assignments and didn't want to be running around the Balkans on my own. I kind of lured him across by saying, oh, there's going to be all these beautiful women in the Balkans, like supermodels, come on, dude. And we got there and it was torrential rain all over Eastern Europe. I mean, like the Danube flooded while we were there. It was an utter mess. And by the time we hit Trogir, he was like fairly annoyed with me, just like, come on, you promised me all these topless women on the beach and all I'm looking at are postcards. And I was kind of holding in reserve that at this church, it had the most famous naked statue of Eve. It was sort of the first naked statue of Eve, or I don't know how large a region. I want to say 13th century sculpture. So I was sort of stringing along going, oh, well, there'll be great topless women in Trogir. Not telling him it was his carving on the church. And of course we got there and I'm ready for my big ha-ha joke moment. And it's all scaffolded up. You couldn't even see her. But we went to the church anyway, and one of the side chapels was being restored and had been cleaned back to white marble, but the rest of it just had this smoky darkness. I think I mentioned earlier, the stone there is very creamy. It's almost like the color of brie. It's very warm. But inside this church, it had been stained dark by years of candles. It had this very heavy, oppressive, this is a land that has seen woes type of feeling. It was one of the weightiest churches I've ever been in. And we went over and lit huge, and they were actually beeswax, big, fat candles. I mean, they were just, I'm Italian American and coming from having lived in Italy, a lot of times you get the churches that have the electric light switches.
Put sure,
your 25 centesimi in, you flip. I know it's better for the artwork in the church, but doesn't carry so much of the emotional weight. I was suddenly in this dark, smoke-stained church and the drooling rain on this coast that has seen so many invasions and even in our lifetime has seen warfare. It was a very heavy moment, a very sobering one, but probably when I felt most connected to here's what these people have experienced.
Mm-hmm.
There are these beautiful playboats bobbing in a harbor the color of a peacock's tail, and it's very easy to pretend that you're in Italy and you're sitting in a cafe that's serving you great wood-fired pizza and you're drinking Campari and soda. You feel like you could be down the Amalfi Coast or something. But that was kind of what brought it all back home to me, that this is an area that has seen a lot of suffering and mm-hmm. has survived it with really an amazing grace. To be able to go there and connect to the place when it's still in this transition, when it hasn't packaged itself up for tourism. I mean, it's like being in Prague after the wall came down type of feeling. Mm-hmm. It's almost like they haven't begun their own spin yet. I mean, places like Dubrovnik might be different, and that's part of why I avoided them. You can still walk and experience both those elements of the shiny, happy beaches, which I'm told have topless women most of the time, but just not that April. But for me, what was really amazing was that they hadn't begun constructing their own story out of it yet.
I did have one set of questions that I got asked by a listener knowing you were coming on the show, and that's from Wes. And I'm not sure you're going to be able to answer it because of your not getting to Dubrovnik, but he was wondering if he did go there, what was a good day trip outside of that area? I don't know if you got far enough south to answer that question.
Dubrovnik? No, I'm afraid I didn't. Although okay. I can pass along a warning from a colleague of mine. A colleague did warn me that Bosnia and Herzegovina have a small strip of coastline north of Dubrovnik, and it's one of those kind of 100-foot swaths of unmarked border, the type that tripped me up around Krapina that we crossed mm-hmm. repeatedly. But apparently this one has a speed trap. So she got a ticket, I believe, both going and coming, because it really sneaks up on you. I mean, on the way back, she knew it was a possibility, and it still was so unmarked it happened again. So I would caution anyone driving north, and because there is only one highway, that's something they're likely to encounter. I would say from Dubrovnik, getting up to Trogir and Hvar, this, which is a little farther out from Hvar, might be a little mm-hmm. bit off the beaten track possibility. If memory's serving, it was 6 or 8 hours up the coast to Trogir. So,
not so much a day trip, okay.
No, your caller might be better off going out to the islands north of Dubrovnik, would be my guess. But it's nothing I can speak to personally, unfortunately.
Okay. As we wind this up, are there anything else that you would like to leave people with if they're thinking about a trip to Croatia?
Brush up on their German. You're going to be doing a lot of sit-ups to wear off the fried cheese. Grapefruit gum.
Grapefruit gum.
Grapefruit gum. We became addicted to grapefruit gum, which sounds fairly disgusting, I realize, and apparently it is a Wrigley's product, but we cannot find it in any other country. We've checked about 20 plus collectively now. It is a product seemingly unique to Croatia. I've even tried Googling around to see if I can get some of it sent here, and I've had no luck at all. But grapefruit gum, I would recommend to anyone who's headed into Croatia. It was one of those unexpected newsstand purchases that winds up defining an entire trip for you.
I understand what you mean. There's a Coca-Cola drink that I can't get in the U.S., an apple drink, and they sell it just over the border in Mexico, but I can't find it in the U.S.
Oh, no.
Even though it's...
Because that's so close. I mean,
exactly.
And you can probably only bring so much back across with you before exactly. they start looking at you funny. Yeah. We brought home a fair amount of grapefruit gum and have been squabbling over it for 2 years. Discovered a whole pack, but we're not going to tell Edward. He has to listen to the whole show to find that out.
Well, I hope that we don't cause problems for you.
Yeah. I don't want to give up my last pack. I was going to at least surprise him with a piece next time he came to visit. But yeah, the grapefruit gum was terrific. I think it was that combination of the familiar but slightly twisted. I guess I would just encourage people. I understand Dubrovnik is a very amazing Pearl of the Adriatic type of place. But I think if they want to engage a little bit more with the color and character, to get into that story before it's processed, tourism, to maybe head inland. Zagreb is a great starting point. It is an amazing place to arrive by train if you're somewhere else in Europe. Very mm-hmm. user-friendly on that front. From there, it is not terribly difficult to rent a car and head outward. It's a pretty amazing opportunity. I mean, Croatia is one of those destinations that's all over the cover of the glossy magazines now. I think we're really lucky that there still are these parts inland where things aren't fully scripted yet. Rick Steves has already covered the Plitvica Lakes. It's all blasting wide open right now. But I would encourage people to try and see that authentic story before it gets lost under the layers of interpretations. Even if you don't speak the language, you can drive around and you can eat sausages and drink wormwood wine, unless you can't eat sausages if you're me. But, you know, but I think there still is a very visceral experience to be had there. So I would encourage people to go a little outside their comfort zone on this one. And it certainly was for me, even having lived in Europe. Frankly, I was scared taking a night train from Naples into Slovenia and then crossing over the border. I didn't know what to expect in the Balkans. And on the whole, it has wound up being one of the best trips of my life. And from someone that often is out in the field 150 days a year, I mean, that's saying a lot.
Again, our guest has been Amanda Castleman. Amanda, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thanks, Chris. It's been a pleasure.
Normally at this point in the show, I'd have an internet resource for you and some news from the community, but I'm going to skip that this week. I have a trip this weekend, and if I'm going to get out of town, I still have to pack. And if I'm going to get this out on time, I'm going to have to edit this in the car with a wireless card. So we'll wind this show down here. If you have any comments for me, feel free to send them to host@amateurtraveler.com or leave them on the discussion board, amateurtraveler.com/board. Or call the comment line. You can find that number at amateurtraveler.com/contact. As always, thanks so much for listening.
I got to see one more cathedral. I got to sit in one more cafe. I know that I should be heading home, but maybe not today.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.